According to our next guest, the problem of media representations about mental health is now a global issue, with health agencies expressing concern about Purdue's stigma and its outcomes, specifically social exclusion. In many countries, the statistic of 1 in 4 people experiencing a mental health condition prevails, making it essential that more is known about how to improve media portrayals. With a globally projected increase in mental health conditions, Dr. Michael Birch's book, Mediating Mental Health, offers a detailed critical analysis of media representations. The book looks across fictional and factual genres in film, television, and radio, examining media constructions of mental health identity. It also questions the opinions of journalists, mental health care professionals, and people with conditions with regard to mediated mental health meanings. Michael Birch lectures in the Department of English and Communications at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts in North Adams, Massachusetts, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the program. Mike, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, Joe, thank you very much for having me on.
Let us begin very simply with the only thing that really tripped me up as I was starting to read this book, which is the word mediating.
Let's illuminate this technical term. When we're talking about media, they mediate to some extent or produce media representations of the subject that they examine. So mediating is in a shorter term for media representations.
So why is this so important? Because we see media representations of everything. But what specifically drew you to mental health?
What specifically drew me to this subject was that I had started off working as a volunteer in a number of mental health care centers many years ago, I hasten to add, and then went on towards working in special education, where mental health issues would still surface in any number of different ways. I then went back to college later in life, decided I wanted to do a master's degree in cultural studies, and was looking around for a subject to look at. And basically, one morning I heard a political interview genre on a Sunday morning. This is when you get that particular type of genre taking place.
Yeah.
And I heard this phrase, killings by mentally ill people. Now, this was, to me, it wasn't a question of it being a problem statement. It raised a number of issues. People who have mental health conditions don't do that. They simply don't do that. And when we look at what is going on, in particular in that genre and others like news, we see the topic of mental health distorted. Whilst the situation is changing, Joe, and it is getting a little bit better, predominantly in the US and in the UK and other countries, Otto Wahl, I think at the University of Connecticut, has done an awful lot of work about media representations in the United States, Greg Filo in the UK. The problem really is that themes of dangerousness prevail, where other more useful information could replace those themes.
Now, let me just jump in with a very generic follow-up question, which is about of what you just said, of that doesn't happen. And I guess I say, in painting this with an extremely broad brush, but someone who, and we'll take just recent examples of Jared Lee Loeffner, who's in the news today, or what happened in Aurora, Colorado.
James Holmes,
James Holmes. Are you looking, is it possible to commit such crimes, especially in the case of James Holmes, of what we've now found out a little bit about his background? Can you commit such a thing without having some sort of mental condition?
Can you commit such an act? No, you can't. In the nature of those particular cases that you mention, and we have to look at the statistics that exist.
Mm.
In the countries, say, like the UK and the USA. Now, in the USA, every day, 83 people are killed by handguns.
Mm.
And predominantly, most of those people have not got any health condition.
Right. And that's for but if you have somebody who's going in, and I think if we're talking about a mass killing, mm-hmm. and if you have somebody going in who is has had some sort of and we see this in both cases with Loeffner mm-hmm. and with Holmes. You see this where people have said, okay, well, we have noticed problems on a mental health scale that have surfaced over time. Now, specific to the point of what you're talking about, how does the media portray that in a way to make that responsible?
What they have to do is to correct the imbalance which is taking place at the present moment. Both Otto Wahl and Greg Filo in the UK have put a figure of 2/3 of media representations about mental health referencing these themes. And what we have to do is to correct that imbalance. As I say, change is beginning to take place because a lot of groups are actually making their presence known in the public arena. You see people like Glenn Close being involved in any number of organisations. In one particular organisation to, you know, improve understanding about that. But what we have to do is to look at which particular genres are causing those problematic issues specifically around stigma. Mm. When we misportray mental health, we create stigma. And that is what we really do not need. And we have particularly good genres or good representations of mental health that occur that actually do a great job of looking into mental health and improving knowledge about it. I would say that the book really does identify news as a genre form that is got a lot of issues when it comes to that. What we do to improve it is to actually, and this is what the book proposes, is to create relationships between journalists in news institutions, mental health care professionals, and people who've got conditions, and to actually look at improving those. And in places like, for instance, Australia and now the UK and to some extent in the USA, there are organisations that are now looking to do that. There's one in particularly very good one in Australia, the Hunter Institute for Mental Health, New South Wales, that is actually working with any number of news organisations, going through training, going through, you know, informing them of useful new knowledge, and improving what is largely a public health issue.
You talk about stigma, mm-hmm. and I want to stick with that for a second
sure.
because I find it fascinating. Because mental health is such a broad term,
oh, yeah.
as is physical health. Hmm. Physical health, if you are in ill physical health, that can mean that you have broken your wrist or that you have stage 4 cancer. And either can be the case, but obviously the treatment and the concern are extremely different and on a wide scale. Same goes with mental health. You can have an extreme mental condition which causes great alarm and great concern not only to the patient but to the family and even to the community, whereas you also have millions of people who suffer from panic, anxiety, depression, or any number of quote-unquote treatable or livable mental health conditions. Mm-hmm. So how do, and this is one of the reasons I like the book, and because right on the subtitle is, how do you put that into context? How do you say, okay, this is what we're dealing with, and not create a stigma? Because if you break your wrist, you don't mind telling your friend that you've broken your wrist.
Right.
If you are experiencing some sort of anxiety or some sort of depression and seeking counseling and therapy, many people just hold that in.
Well, that's the key issue, and I think you've really sort of hit the nail on the head there. The problem that we currently face is that what we need to do is to make it okay to talk about mental health issues, and talking about it. Choosing people that you can actually sort of talk to about a particular mental health issue, be it depression or anxiety, is is one thing, but actually challenging. And I think a good idea is to challenge these boundaries which have been set up, these stereotypes which have been set up, and to actually get into the practice of challenging people about what, if they have a negative idea about that, to actually challenge it is a good way forward in everyday life situation. But clearly, when we start to look at other genres out there that we see on television, this particular topic is becoming more talkable. It's when we see shows like The Sopranos, when we see the United States of Tara, when we see any number of different films, be it Rain Man or Angel Baby, which was an Australian film, those sorts of films start to actually increase the exposure of different sorts of mental health conditions. And once we can actually talk about those with each other when we see them, I think this is a very, very good, from the ground up approach, way of dealing with the topic and starting to actually get it out into the public's into the public sphere, and to actually sort of make it an okay subject to talk about.
Because there is this balloon that needs to be popped, which is that is over all of this of mental health issues, and on that balloon is the word crazy, and it's really everything is sucked into that. And so you look at someone of a representation on say a reality show, a quote unquote reality show, and the usually the entertaining one is the one who's just a little nuts.
To some extent, it might.
But
be
you know,
amusing.
I mean, that's the way it's set up. That's the way you have. This is the. I mean, all of these shows tend to have. They're very formulaic. You have the. You have the. The Southern kid who comes in, who's very religious and very straight laced, and they come into a wild situation, and to see how they're going to react. And then you have the wild city kid, and to see how they're going to react. And then you have the one who's just, is usually there and jumping on the sofa and doing all kinds of crazy things. And you're like, oh, okay, what and how are they going to react? Back to him, and it seems as though, again, very formulaic, but in many depictions, that excess, for want of a better term, seems to be what draws us in.
I think you're talking about human nature, and I think you're, in terms of the audience, actually sort of being drawn into something like that that they might perceive as entertaining. But the producers of those shows, whilst at a level of entertainment, need to have a responsible sort of approach to what they're actually going to do. But in terms of actually putting people, on, they want, and this is part of the key, one of the key aspects of the book, is that various media institutions are always looking at, are always wanting to find the largest possible audience that they can. And it's particularly like that example that you use, that they're going to want to produce something in their show which might be, in inverted commas, a little crazy or a little bit off beam, that is actually going to make it entertaining. Reality shows are a genre form under their own. They really do, pull in a particular audience. But that, in that instance, I would be suggesting that the people who produce that show, if only there was a more responsible approach to issues to do with public health and specifically mental health, that would be welcomed.
It certainly seems, yes, I agree about the, I certainly understand what you're saying about the producers of those programs and how those people are represented. What's interesting to me also, though, and not to get off on a tangent about reality television, but you look at but when we're talking about our popular media, of one of the most watched programs on television is American Idol. We will now, not during the contest portion, but during the portion where people are going in for not rehearsals, what's the word I'm looking for the The words got in my head. You go in and you, very simple word that I can't think of right now, Michael.
I'm sorry. I hold my hands up. I used to watch American Idol a few years ago, but
so you go in and you go in for your shot in front of the judges, and some of these people obviously have a great talent, and other people.
You mean in the preliminary stages,
yes,
when they're actually going in for a selection sort of,
yes,
process.
Okay. And you see people who are obviously, it's very sad.
Indeed, it is.
You know, and it's very disturbing.
Yeah.
And it's how they are, because we then, as an audience, become very dismissive of them. The judges are very dismissive of them. But you know, who then takes the next step? The same case, who then takes the next step to actually care for these people? And I don't know that responsibility, but the same can be said of, again, looking at the cases of in Colorado and in Tucson, where you have individuals who were in college, where problems were noted, yeah, and where we don't know how to then take that next step of what to do.
Right. Well, the first issue I would draw attention to, and I'm going to try and get my memory in order. Let's start with American Idol. American Idol.
Audition, by the way, was the word I was looking for. An audition.
There is a choice on the part of the producers of that program to actually, you know, select certain people to show.
Right.
And they perceive that might be entertaining.
But we as an audience seem to find that entertaining.
And some people, you know, will find that entertaining.
Yes.
Others, you know, will look to it and will move on from the show at some particular point later on. When we start to look at even, not just some of the people who are auditioning for that, some of the people who do really, really well on it, and the UK version, and you're going to have to help me here, was that there was a lady...
Simon... Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
Simon Cowell was one of the producers of the show, but they had... the audience will be shouting it down...
Paula Abdul?
Not Paula Abdul. This was a lady, a middle-aged lady from Scotland.
Oh, Susan Boyle.
Susan Boyle, right.
Yeah.
Now, there was real concern for her.
Yeah.
And her mental health status when, you know, this success and this machine that took over her life actually sort of advanced her forward, and she went from being somebody who lived in a semi-detached sort of house in a Scottish town to being literally a superstar overnight.
And who clearly had issues before and clearly had issues after.
And you go from being just an ordinary sort of everyday person to becoming, you know, this huge name. And clearly, you know, the voice, which was so fantastic, you know, catapulted her into a new environment. In that particular instance, we see another aspect which clearly there was concern for, and people who were producing that show went to great lengths to actually address, you know, her situation and take care of her. And I would like to sort of see that sort of thing, you know, avoided, for those auditions that we don't, you know, we choose not to go over the top in terms of choosing one particular person and to some extent holding up a person to ridicule. That, I don't think, is really entertaining.
The reason why people will say, well, why are you talking about reality shows and why are you doing that? You know, why are you spending time on this? The reason I think why it's important is because what you said earlier about the news and the news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that in many cases has become part of our news cycle.
It has, and with the two cases that you mentioned, Jared Lee Lochner and James Holmes. The first questions I'm asking when I hear these particular issues, first of all, arise in the news. The first thing I ask is, how old are these young men?
Yeah.
Are they between 18 and 25? And the answer to that is yes.
Yes.
Now, what we should know about schizophrenia, but we don't know about schizophrenia, which is likely, well, certainly what Jared Leigh Lochner has, and which will likely be the case, and I wouldn't like to speculate, it would be wrong of me to do so. What we've actually sort of got is a particular age range where that is when schizophrenia usually emerges. And often, with that particular individual, their experience of reality is removed from what you or I would be commonly sharing. Often, the person who may have this condition may not know what that sort of experience is that they are having. And so they may, as in the case of Holmes, actually sort of seek some sort of attention. I don't know that that happened with Jared Leigh Lochner. But clearly, what we don't know about this condition, or what many people don't know about this condition, is how awful a condition it really can be for the person who actually experiences it. But what we also don't know about it is that most of the people who actually, you know, have this condition are far from being dangerous to other people. This is absolutely a myth, which needs to be corrected. But because news picks up and news values are going to pick up on the crazy, in inverted commas, or the strange, and, you know, look at these particular events, this is the type of news report which gets covered more than any other. Though that said, I think we are getting to find out more about autism now, more about dementia, more about Parkinson's, and more about some aspects of bipolar disorder. And those particular conditions are beginning to, you know, enter into the news cycle more. And I think this is when I come back to this idea of correcting the imbalance. We need to have a greater exposure of all of these other conditions, because in the United States, you have 77 million people who will experience a mental health condition in their life, and we need to have more useful knowledge out there for the public. We need to have more knowledge that is accessible, easier to understand, rather than the various handbooks that we have, you know, which psychiatrists may use or psychologists may use, so that people can, you know, recognize things more easily and engage in helping themselves. You know, 77 million people is a huge number of people. And when stigma may impact that particular group of people, may actually sort of get them to feel socially excluded, so they don't want to talk about their particular issue, and they resist potential mental health care, then, you know, that's the problem of having produced stigma in media representations of mental health. That's not good. It's a situation which needs to be corrected. And that's really what the book looks at. Positive things that journalists can do, and things that, you know, are basically providing good indicators or ways forward.
Why do you think we are, and I keep on thinking it may change, but we are so singular in our debate process when it comes to situations involving mental health and the mentally ill? And where, again, using the situation in Colorado, you have a horrific act, and the focus immediately becomes about guns. We're going to talk about guns. Okay. We have the situation that happens in Tucson. We immediately focus solely on the guns. I'm not saying we shouldn't. We should. But why do we not also, with the same fury and the same focus and the same political agenda, take a look at how these individuals went through a system that you indicated from 18 to 25 is a system that often can be fraught with this type of disability, and not address that?
Well, there are a number of reasons And any mental health care professional listening will be holding up any number of points in their own mind and maybe hollering at the radio right now. One is funding for mental health. Mental health is something which is important to everybody. And facilities for helping the mental health aspect of our lives are really a problem. I think in the USA, in terms of the current situation with regards to healthcare, how it operates, if you want to go and see somebody to talk about particular problems, I think you, generally speaking, the general rule is, you know, across 1 year, 10 visits.
Right.
That's it.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. You might be feeling a little down, and goodness me, right at this particular moment, high unemployment, lots of people out of jobs, feeling depressed, anxious about ways forward, probably need to talk. 10 visits may be enough, but for any number of different conditions, 10 visits is inadequate. And certainly one aspect is, you know, a change in the system that's going to enable, you know, greater a greater number of people to get greater healthcare. That is one thing we need to look at. You know, in a general sense, mental health care for individuals, which actually happens to be a fairly small group of the population of people who actually suffer from a mental health condition, that needs to have a greater emphasis on sort of identification, promotion of understanding about mental health, prevention of certain situations.
I understand what you're saying, but let's just take a step back, because there's the machinations of the gun laws, there's the machinations of the mental health system, but in our society and in our culture and in what we want to talk about and what we want to debate and what we want to analyze, we will go for the gun and we won't go for the head.
In a sense, there's another issue here, which the book also sort of covers. And it's also very much something I deal or work with in terms of our students at Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts and some of the classes that I teach. I teach them about security. Security to do with their self-identity. Security is always in a relationship to insecurity. And if I start, for example, to say to you, Joe, you have got any number of issues. In a general sense, most people, if we're talking about that relationship between security and insecurity, will put up defenses and say, no, I'm fine. People want to feel secure about their self-identity, who they are in terms of their mental well-being. And what tends to happen is these are boundaries which are part and parcel of everyday life. These are the things which deny us from talking about things to do with mental health. Walls get put up internally and, in a general sense, stop us from accepting this other issue, or on the opposite of accepting something, is denying. What we don't do is get into, you know, what a particular condition is, why it occurs, how it comes to occur, what we can do about resolving that particular condition that may facilitate recovery or rehabilitation. And in that particular instance, most people, most of the time, don't want to talk about these particular issues because of the stigma attached to it. And again, that's all about how, in terms of our own self-identity, we tend towards protecting ourselves. And let's say, let's talk about guns, or let's talk about the system. Let's talk about anything else, but how we could improve our, you know, well-being. And we've done this now, in terms of improving our physical well-being, for years and years and years and years. If I could just digress for one moment, many of the audience will have maybe heard of somebody called David Beckham.
Yes.
David Beckham's soccer player for the LA Galaxy, used to play for a team in the United Kingdom who I can't mention their name because they're situated 30 miles from my dearest city of Liverpool. At one particular point, he broke his metatarsal bone in his foot. Now, he's a walking media magnate. You know, people love to find out stories about him.
Right.
Now, tabloids do what they do. Tabloid newspapers in Britain are they are unique unto themselves, if I can put it politely. And they often go to great lengths to misrepresent certain sorts of topics, mental health being one of them. But in this respect, with physical health, they took apart what a metatarsal was, what had happened to David Beckham's foot, how long it was going to take to heal, when we could see him back, you know, curling one of those balls into the penalty area. Why they have been able to do that and not engage in sort of unpacking, for instance, how many types of bipolar disorder there are, or bipolar conditions there are, is part and parcel of the change I'm thinking that we are now going through. Maybe one day in the future they will, and maybe in some instances they are. But clearly what is needed is a greater exposure of conditions, a greater and better language to talk about this than the sort that we see in newspapers and in particular television news.
Michael Birch is the author of the book Mediating Mental Health: Contexts, Debates, and Analysis. It is published by Ashgate. Michael, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for sharing time with
thank
us.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
A great pleasure. Again, the name of the book is Mediating Mental Health, published by Ashgate. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.